people come up to me for years and they'd say, how'd you get somewhere so quick, you know? And I would stop and give them like full on, like, okay, well, I do open mics every day. And then when I'm done, I podcast, and then I audition, and then I go to the store and I watch the guys till like 2 a.m. just to see all the different spots. And then I hit all the other clubs. And while I'm telling them, I can see them just completely tuning out. They're like, nah, They're thinking I'm going to give them some magic
You download this app,
and they open this door, and it's just castles of stage time.
Well, yeah, you could suck dick, but like, but that's not gonna last either. Yeah, you know what I mean, I think that's the thing.
Yeah, you know, it's just crazy
because you come.
This is the Standby Podcast.
Yes, we're excited because we have a great, great new guest today, the great Dean Del Rey, everybody. Dean Del Rey,
yeah,
is your camera right here.
Yeah.
Awesome. Host of his own fantastic podcast, Let There Be Talk.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, guys.
And what's the name
Cactus
of it?
Cactus Radio Network.
Yep. So, please check it out because it's amazing. He's got you got a lot of great guests in your podcast and is it usually mostly like in the music background kind of thing for that or whatever?
I have a couple podcasts. So I got the one that's kind of music, comedians, and actors. And then I have the one called The Grail, where it's artisans that like make stuff or build stuff, people that work outside the box. Yeah. Like,
oh, that's cool.
Today I interviewed a woman that started her own dog food out in Malibu.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, there's no. There's every.
And is it successful?
Well, it's in Erewhon, which is
so that's pretty good.
A great story on how you get something in Erewhon, the rigorous inspections and everything
through
that they do with the food to make sure that that it's what it is.
Yeah,
so
it seems like a very hard thing to pull off. You know?
Well, I mean, to start a dog food, like people would be like, well, that's kind of a weird guess, but I'm like, well. Somebody in their midlife was like, I'm going to start a dog food.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you do that? So I want to know that, my dog eats it. It's super healthy. It's, it's great.
It comes from like real like food. Like
She was a chef. Decided to be a dog chef now.
Oh, wow.
And they make it out on a farm in Malibu. Fresh salmon and chicken and duck and stuff. Yeah.
Because a lot of people have started cooking for their pets, right? Yeah. I don't have a pet currently, but they have started like proper cooking, like stovetop cooking.
Absolutely. That's what this is. Because what I didn't know, I've got a dog now for 2 years, is the dog food, there's no regulations.
No.
So most of it's made in China, and it has sawdust in it.
Right.
Actual sawdust filler in there. They just put, so your dog's eating like wood chips and shit. Like, why dogs are all messed up with allergies and joint issues, because
they're just eating like,
oh man,
sludge.
So I mean, if you like your pet and you want it around a while, I recommend you feed it something
more than sawdust.
I actually saw the poop. It was just like fucking.
Oh really?
I was picking the poop up and I was like, "What is this?" It was like if a
cycle it back through.
It was like if a termite. You know when a termite goes into the wood?
Yeah.
It's just like, that's what her poop was like. It was just like termite dust.
Well, I actually sell that poop to Home Depot and then make a great profit because, use mulch. Yeah,
yeah. It becomes
so dust.
Out there dealing mulch.
The circle of life.
Yeah.
I was making fun of a friend of mine for cooking for his dog when he started doing it. He was a couple weeks in. And I got to say, I then saw his dog like 2 months later and the dog was
better?
Fit.
Oh, really?
Fit as hell. Like, just healthy and fit, and I'm like, okay, this is
it's just like humans, man.
That's true. I mean, at the end of the
garbage, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you eat like McDonald's the whole time, you're gonna eat crap, and then but if you eat healthier, you're gonna feel better, you're gonna be more healthy. It's like, this person looks, younger, or like,
live longer.
You
want your dog to live long. My whole thing now that I got her is like, I saw some guy on Instagram, he had the dog talking, they just show their dog, and it's like, my owner keeps crying about when I'm gonna die. I'm 2. glue. You know what I mean? It's that's how you get. You get attached to it, and you're like, oh, man, okay, these dogs live about 12. I'll be 62.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you know?
I know.
But don't you still want to kill people who call it a fur baby?
No.
You're not doing that, are you?
Yeah, nobody's like, say, call her a fur baby.
You haven't heard that yet?
No.
Oh, have you not either?
No. I know.
Oh,
my God. I know the furries.
There's an epidemic out there of people who call their dogs and cats their fur babies.
Oh, really? No.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
I think you walked into the wrong chat. I don't know.
Well, that's good. I don't want to be part of that either.
I'm just like a porn chat.
I'm not on Reddit, so
I'm surprised that the two pet owners haven't heard this term.
No, I actually haven't.
At the dog park.
No, I don't go to the dog park. They're dirty.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, they're dirty. I go to areas where there's no dogs, maybe a baseball park, and just let her run around the baseball park.
Oh, got it.
Because these other dogs, man, these owners, they're out of their mind. Hey, your dog's cool, right? Oh, yeah, my dog's cool. Oh, she's never done that before. Get the fuck out of here. There's no way your dog's never done that before.
I love when they go like you and they're like, hey, is your dog cool? And then they got this big thing in their mouth, and I'm like,
muzzle.
No, it's fine. I'm like, nah, it's got a fucking muzzle. But it's fine. It's just so they don't.
They're crazy. People are crazy.
You know? And have you ever traveled with your dog?
Yeah, I bring Gertie all over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is it now? Because is it supposed to be? Is your dog your emotional support dog?
No, she's service animal.
She's service animal.
She
can
sniff out diabetes. Kids have a diabetic shock.
Really?
All right, good.
She'll go warn people.
Oh. Yeah, do you have your documents on you right now?
Hell yeah, I got it in my wallet.
Wow. Who's that doctor? Because I need him to also give me another prescription for something.
She sniffs out diabetes. Half of America has diabetes, so she's been busy.
She's sniffing like crazy.
She's just walking through the streets. Yeah. What the fuck? They're everywhere.
Yeah, especially at the airport. She's like, fatties.
Ah, wow. Okay, so you're just a service animal, so you do have like a permit to travel with a dog. Okay.
She's 18 pounds. She just sits in the bag.
You've seen
it.
She's
on planes as well?
Yeah, she's not like some of these people that bring on like a fucking giraffe.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was one guy I saw, this is like 5 years ago, brought a pig on. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
A pig?
You're just being an idiot.
Yeah.
Emotional support pig.
Well, there was an epidemic, wasn't it? They've cut back a little bit, but yeah, people were bringing
in. Cut down big time.
Peacocks. Remember that one?
Saw in the fucking,
kicked off.
You're on fucking Southwest.
Yeah.
Fucking.
And for anybody watching, we're not making this up.
No.
There was a peacock support animal incident.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane, man.
And the peacock had better seats.
I mean, some people think bringing your dog everywhere is insane, but, she's small.
Yeah.
And she loves to go.
Yeah, yeah. She's not like barking or anything like that. She's very behave well.
Is it really hard to organize? Like when you're going to a gig and stuff, do you have to ask for like a hotel that's pet friendly?
If you're a service animal, they get in anywhere.
Oh, you don't even need permission.
Nah, sometimes people don't even see her. She just looks like luggage. You know what I mean? Because she's in a bag. They don't even. I'm not like, yeah, I got this with me too. I just roll in. Like, thanks, man.
Yeah, okay. You're not.
I'm not asking.
Which is smart. You're not going like, hey, I have a dog here. They ask you, it's like, hey, it's service.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I always thought it would be really hard work to get it organized. And
no, well, they got that pit bull racism going, you know, where they're like,
is she a pit bull?
No, she's a French bulldog. But I'm saying that's how they get around the pit bull. What they do is they say breed weight and types or whatever. There's something you'll see it in all the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like they don't want any pit bulls around there.
Oh.
Yeah, that's basically what they're saying. Wow. No pit bulls.
Oh,
you know, in their own racist way.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So there's racism.
They list every other.
breed exclusive. It's some kind of shit. I can't even remember now, but I used to see it when I was looking for apartments.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Subject
to breed approval.
Oh, like, wow.
Okay.
Wow, you couldn't do that with people.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Well, you could. You can. Yeah. I mean,
they do it, but they don't print it.
Wow. So let's go back. So, because you started kind of like comedy like, you know, you're later, LA, but like, but you're from, where do you?
I'm from California, Bay Area.
Bay Area.
I've lived here 22 years now.
In LA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Started 44 years old here at the Comedy Store.
At the Comedy Store. Yeah. So you were already living here. You didn't like move to start comedy here, you know?
No, I was living here, played music.
Yeah.
And then, after that kind of died out after 25 years, then I just started selling motorcycles at Harley.
Uh-huh.
And then, landed a movie role and then another movie role and then started comedy from one of the movie roles.
Oh, really? So that's what led you to do? Did you ever wanted to do a stand-up?
I wanted to do stand-up my whole life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I just didn't know how to do it when I was a kid. Okay. When I was a kid, there was no, like, comedy camps. And there was no... YouTube,
yeah,
to kind of watch.
But
course.
Wasn't music your number one ambition?
No,
as well.
I would have done comedy if I knew how to.
What kind of career you got that you stumbled into music when all you wanted was to be a comedian?
Well, you know, in the 70s, it was like SNL was big, and rock was big, and Pryor and Carlin and Cheech and Chong. That was all one in one, hand in hand.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
It.
Like you'd watch SNL and you'd be like, oh God, I love John Belushi more than anything. Yeah. And then I'd be watching that and then see the band playing. And so to me, it was all the same.
Like all the same, yeah.
Yeah. I just, you go to a party and they'd play Earth, Wind & Fire and then they'd play Cheech and Chong. It was just the same, but there was no real outlet that I knew of, you know, of where to really go learn comedy. I wasn't going to take theater in school or whatever. It seemed like anytime you wanted to learn something, it was the wrong thing. Like when I wanted to learn guitar, you had the folk guys teaching the old guy, drunken sailor. Hey, hey. Like, nah, this, I want Back in Black. So there wasn't that. Now, shit, man, you can learn comedy.
I mean, there's too much. Yeah, there's camps. I think there's too much stuff to learn comedy instead of like just do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
right.
like, so that's interesting. You started. So like, what was the first? Like, did you?
I've got a question that I want to ask. Right. Well, like, because I've seen your. Is it a Harley that you've got? Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably a collection. I'm gonna guess. But
I did. I don't have any bikes anymore.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. Now that you got the pup in your life, that's what I was gonna ask you.
Yeah.
Was that a tough decision? Because I know that the motorcycle was your main. Transportation around in LA, and then you got a puppy, so now you're.
I stopped riding. I got ran over a few years ago.
Oh wow!
Yeah. That's like this fucking skin missing right here.
Oh okay.
But some lady ran me over to fucking 70 on the highway.
Oh shit, like man. Just like you were like all of a sudden just.
I was just riding. She was just a carjacking. She just mowed me over.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Shit.
So I stopped riding a little while ago because I had to have neck surgery. I can't wear a helmet now. Can't have a backpack or helmet, nothing, no weighted shit on me.
Oh, really?
But okay. Burr and I were just in New York a couple days ago, and we were coming down from we played up in Woodstock.
Oh,
we were
wow!
Coming down the highway, and this dude was just riding this badass BMW GS. That's my favorite bike, the one that's kind of on road, off road.
Okay.
Looks like he'd ride it on the moon.
Yeah,
and he had a fucking dog in the back. Looked like a French bulldog or maybe a Boston. But it was just back there.
Just there, chilling.
I was picturing
so
when I knew
cool.
that you had a puppy now.
That's so cool.
That would have been, cool ride.
I don't know if Gertie, she might like it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to get goggles on.
Yeah.
I mean, you see those guys.
Yeah, I've seen it.
They got millions of hits.
Yeah.
Here we are trying to write the best jokes we can, and we get like 17 hits.
And that guy's
hits.
Getting a deal for Discovery Channel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I was like, fuck.
Oh, yeah, he's running ads and stuff.
Well, it's like the guy from... like during the pandemic, the cranberry guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the cranberry was on the skateboard.
That guy, but they've got a house, a car.
Oh, let's face it, we are in love with the least popular art form. The least, like.
It's like the least respect.
I don't think it's the least respected or the least popular. I think it's the hardest to get popular.
That's
what I think.
Okay.
Because, I think it's bigger than ever.
Yeah, but do you ever notice that if you have a good clip of your stand up, you could probably, and it's in front of an audience and everything, that gets less purchase online on social media than if you just talked to camera, if you just sat in a room and talked to camera. Yeah. The actual art form of stand-up is just less popular to people scrolling through.
I think because it takes a minute for them. The ADD world's so bad now. They just want to see immediately like a guy hitting his nuts drunk.
Exactly.
On
you don't
a
have
fucking
to.
Skateboard.
I think the thing is like it's not about. You want material that you're not able to think about. You know,
right.
like you're just...
It's just scrolling.
It's just scrolling on. You see the dog right. and the bike. It's like, that's funny. I don't have to think. I don't have to listen. I don't have to know what's going on. But with stand-up, even if it's like one quick little clip, you still got to pay attention. You got to be...
Yeah. Right.
And I think with comedy, it is a thing that you do have to be in the mood no matter what. You know, like you cannot just... sometimes you don't want to laugh. I mean, like, you know, I'm like, it's fine. Yeah. Are you, you have to, I think when you go to a comedy club, you should be like, okay, I'm going to a comedy club because I want to laugh for like a couple hours.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. But like, if people come with that, with not that mindset, it's like, they're not going to enjoy it. That's why you see some people that like, you could tell they got drunk. You know, they got like their girlfriend or their wife's like, come with me. And you can tell they don't like want to be there. It's because, they don't want to laugh.
That's how I feel. That's why I feel like our art form has a more exclusive audience, just a smaller audience.
Yeah.
Just a fact. Of life.
Music
fans are greater, but stand-up comedy fans, like there are still people in their adult life who haven't gone to stand-up comedy clubs. Sometimes they're intimidated.
Oh yeah.
They don't think they're into comedy.
Yeah.
But it's a harder art form to get into. And like you're saying, like these funny, goofy videos when you're scrolling through, there are people that will look at that and laugh and then look and go, now that's funny after looking at some stand-up.
But
like you were saying, it's the attention span.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, you're mentioning like it's such a hard thing to do, which is also even for you to, you know, to be like at 44 starting, you know, to be like, you know what, I'm gonna, because that's a thing that's like, I mean, like I even go back and think, I'm like, man, like of the stuff that I did when I first started, I was like, I wouldn't do this shit right now at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I was like,
I was riding everywhere on the motorcycle. I go to Bakersfield for like 12 minutes set. Oh, they're gonna give me 12 minutes. I'd ride over the grapevine and be fucking sleet out there and ice cold. Then I'd ride to like Vegas. It'd be one time I was riding to Vegas. It said warning sandstorm.
Oh shit!
And I was like sandstorm. And I was just riding, and then I came down the hill and I just saw a brown wall. And I go, what is that? And man, it was sand. It was just rifling me.
Wow, really?
Oh my god! It was like.
So what do you do at that point? Riding? I don't know. Like, how do you?
I
do you
could
stop
barely
or
see,
you just go?
Man,
like,
I just kind of rode slow, and you're just getting pelted with sand. Yeah. It's like it's almost like that Thule fog where you can't even see.
Oh shit!
Yeah, and then I got through it, and I was like, "Wow, that was crazy!" Just to do a spot, man.
Wow,
do a spot.
That's I mean, and that's I'm like, and that's what I was gonna say. So it's like, I think so because you're naturally funny, and I think to me that's one of the key to me, in my opinion. Like, you need to be naturally funny to do stand up, I think. But for you, was it helpful for you or to make it quicker to rise quicker in the comedy world that you already lived such a, you know, life, you know, like that you had so many, because when you start young, you know, there's, you
But I think stand-up is exponential, though. I think that when you do start, when you have more life experience, you're better at it.
Yeah, so
but you don't know how to do it.
Got
so people are like, well, you kind of had an advantage. You were
no, because you had more material, but you don't know how to deliver it.
There's no advantage until you get on stage, because when I first started, I was watching comedy quite a bit. And I was like, oh, these guys, you know, you just go up there and just say stuff. I had no idea. Zero. I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't have any friends doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go like, hey, how do you do this?
Yeah.
Do you just go? And I would just went up. I didn't know anybody on the patio or anything. They're just like, get out of here, dude. You know what I mean? I was like, hey, what do we do? And they're like, fuck off.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It was literally that gnarly.
Yeah, yeah. That's how, I mean, that's how it
did
was
you
for
have
me.
That thought in
that
your
was
head
here, right?
That,
at the comedy
here.
Show.
Did you have that thought of that a lot of comics have new material every night?
I totally thought that you just go up and say stuff every night. And then after a while, I saw that they were doing the same stuff. And I go, oh, I'd never do that. I tell new stuff every night. I thought you were just up there riffing.
Yeah.
Truly thought that, you know, all the years I watched stand-up, all the years that I thought maybe
that
Pryor just walked on and just riffed that.
And
or
you
Seinfeld.
And
you,
and which you came from music as well. So imagine if musicians did a different song.
We just
came up with this one backstage.
Which is interesting because that's a lot of like what we go through as comics with when we perform, you know, in new play or whatever. Like people come, like it's like their first time watching stand-up, and they think it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
They go like, oh,
I truly
so
thought that.
They, yeah, and like they go like, oh, you're just making, no. It's like, no, I have material, and you know, like, yeah, you have, you leave room to improvise, but this is a working thing that you're working bits and stuff like that. So for you, like, you, so how'd you like get into like just even go up for the first time and kind of like just go and...
Well, you know, I did this movie with Ice Cube called The Long Shots. It's
okay,
a football
movie. Yeah.
And in the movie, Garrett Morse, Earthquake, and Michael Collier are on it. Garrett Morse, this is full circle for me now. I grew up on the first cast of SNL. So I was like, holy shit, man, I'm doing a movie. And this is all by fucking luck, you know?
Yeah,
I mean?
How'd you get the movie, by the way?
I was working at Harley, and then Tarantino's people came down. They're doing a biker film, and they wanted me to advise on it. Next thing you know, I got a role on it.
Wow.
From that, I land this Ice Cube film.
Wow.
And, yeah, so... While I was doing the Ice Cube film, Earthquake was one of the guys. I didn't know who Earthquake was, and I didn't know who Michael Collier was. I knew who Garrett Morse was. And we were just doing these scenes where we're in the bleachers. It's like a football movie, and you'd be like, oh, it looks like he got it in the nuts. Those kind of dumb jokes, you know?
Right.
And so Earthquake, I said, what do you do one day on the set? He goes, oh, I'm a comedian. I go, I see comedy all that time. Never heard of it. He goes, oh, come check it out. I went and saw him. I was like, whoa, this guy is fucking great. Yeah. So I told him I wanted to do comedy, and they're just laughing at me. Dude, you're old. You don't just start now, man.
You're
44. But after a couple months of shooting the movie, they could see I was ad-libbing on the script.
Mm-hmm.
And then Earthquake said, man, I think you could do it.
Yeah.
Just go home and start hitting open mics. And I was like, what is that? Like, open mic? Where do you do that? He goes, man, just
Google
it.
You got to figure that out. Yeah.
And then I go, what do I do when I get there? Just say stuff? And he goes, man, you just figure it out. Go to the open mic, man. It's like a clubhouse.
Yeah.
So I just started coming here, hanging at the patio.
Yeah.
And, I remember I just kind of was just putting together stuff. And hey, it's so funny, you're putting together stuff and then a comic before you does the same stuff.
And
you're like, you just have no idea
what to do because that's all you got. You know, you don't have more material to like.
You think you're all original. Like, I'm going to do this skydiving bit, you know. I went skydiving once and the plane ran out of gas. That's going to be funny. And then the next guy, he's doing a skydiving bit. And you're like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Oh, maybe I'll do a bit about being single. You know, and then you just figure it out. I'm still fucking, I'm 13, almost 13 years in. Wow.
Well, we're still figuring
it out. It's harder than ever. I think it's harder than ever.
Right.
Now, for me, people are like, really? And I was like, yeah.
Why is it?
Because I look at a level of people around the store, and you need to rise to the occasion. It's easy if you just want to go out and do bullshit.
Of course.
That's easy.
No, when you want to get good, it's kind of like
good.
The
and
hardest.
If you're touring with Burr,
Come on, man.
I mean? You're touring with one of the greatest ever.
It's like you gotta bring your A game, man.
And also, you gotta fucking study what they're doing, man. A lot of people just get high and drink and go out on the patio, and I sit in there and figure this out.
Of course.
How are these guys doing
this? All the different rhythms you need as well. It's not just the material, but, you know, timing.
Oh, it's everything. It's the look, the timing, the speed, the cadence, the joke writing. And then you got to add, you know, social media on and podcasting.
That would become marketing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that what you feel has made it more difficult in the contemporary era?
Right, because I can't just concentrate on one thing.
Because back in the time, like you would just work on your act and that's it.
Yeah.
Like your manager or agent would do basically pretty much anything.
Totally.
You'd be like, hey, you're here. Yeah. So you're like really just into it. But now, like, we're at the point where, like, we have to do all that, plus we have to do what the manager and the agent does and the PR people and just everything, you know?
It's 17 hats.
It's like, exactly.
Do you have it in the back of your head sometimes that something that you're doing or some piece of material that you're doing can be misconstrued or interpreted as offensive or whatever and put you in the doghouse for a while?
No, I don't have anything that can take away. I'm not on TV or anything, so they're not coming after any of us. There's no thrill in that.
Yeah, because I do miss the days a little bit of being able to deliver your full set and then disappear, and it doesn't exist anymore. So you could offend somebody in real time, but not have to live with it afterwards.
I don't really worry about offending anybody. I think that if I believe in the joke,
Yeah.
If I believe in this joke and you don't like it, then okay. But if I'm just, if you're just doing a joke to shock someone, then that's a shitty joke.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if I truly believe in a joke, I'm doing a bit right now that I fucking love. And, you know, it polarizes half the room.
Right.
And I don't mention politics or anything, but I know where people stand by this bit.
Yeah,
and I love the bit. And that bit has become now my new high watermark of like, fuck, I need this other stuff.
I need to do
as
the same
as this.
Yes.
As good as this.
It's, it's funny because I've got, I'm doing your same bit, by the way. That's why. No, because I've got bits too, like where I'm doing and I'm like, oh, this is a stand. Now I have to like duplicate this times 10 or 15.
Right.
So I can do an hour.
They sniff out the other stuff. They're like,
and it's kind of like, it's a wave because it's when you're doing, you know, you're doing a long set as we do, you know, you see the and then you see what people go like, man, that one is the one that I like. Then you go like, and you get the same kind of like feedback. And I always go like, yeah, that's a new one.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great. Yeah, thank you. So it's like, it's what you mean. It's kind of like get into that next level and get into that other level and writing. Yeah. So, and I was going to say, so like, as you started doing comedy and all this stuff, you know, because you also travel a lot, but also you travel with music too. But like, what's like the best destination that you have gone to, but that to travel with, but also, and then also perform? You know, it don't have to be the same, but like,
right.
But yeah. So,
I mean, I travel, I've been everywhere pretty much from playing music and working in music.
All over the world or the U.S.?
All over the world.
That's how
I've only done comedy in the States other than Canada. I haven't gone to any other places. I wouldn't mind doing Australia because, my podcast is pretty big over there.
Oh, really?
So that'd be great. But I really don't know how to do comedy. Like, Bill did a tour around the world.
Yeah.
But I don't really have yet in my set bits that I think are universal, which I'm trying to work on as far as family stuff that would work in any kind of country.
Got it.
Family stuff. I don't have kids, so I don't really talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked more about stuff that's definitely Americanized, so I wouldn't know how to do that yet.
But you'd be surprised in a lot of ways, like especially Australia,
I was gonna
like you mentioned.
There's, Australia is no problem.
Yeah, and all the expats, and because a lot of audiences, that's the weird thing, not a lot of people think about outside of comedy, but when you're a comedian, a lot of the audiences everywhere are made up of Americans or Canadians or Australians who have found themselves in Amsterdam or who have found themselves in Sweden or whatever.
Right.
So a lot of times, a lot of your stories, there's an audience waiting to hear them.
Yeah. But also,
a bunch of expats hiding out in Portugal going, you know.
And also, it doesn't have to do with just being expats, because I just came from the Dominican Republic and I perform over there. And it was in for this music festival, but they also, it's the first time they were doing like comedy. And I performed in Spanglish, you know, but I was like hoping, I was like, well, I'm going to do a lot of material in English. So I'm hoping like they, and all of them knew English. And
yeah.
And it was material that I do here, you know, that it's nothing like, it wasn't like that, you know, like you know, some universal, but it's also, there's some that was Americanized and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is like, I think that's a thing that you don't, I think because now the world's so universal as well. I think I think it's so, it's a thing that you don't need to
I'm
worry
not really
as
worried
much,
about it. I'm just more focused on how can I get
just aware
better
of
in America right now.
Got it.
And then worry about other spots.
Yeah,
people are like, when you coming to London, I'm like, I haven't even been to Kentucky.
Of course. Yeah.
Doing comedy.
Yeah.
I've been to all the states, but
I'm saying,
you know, I'm just at this point right now where I'm just trying to figure out how to get better.
Yeah.
And I've got all these fucking things coming at me and age also. Going to be 57 here in like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've constantly got to work and try to get better.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be, you know, I got a record out, a music record out that I wrote and recorded. It took me about 3 years to write.
Wow.
And it came out.
You want to, which
one? No, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? But it came out in 99. And I'm thinking, like, whenever I hear it, I think, no cringeworthy moments. I really.
Like, you, is,
No fat.
That's right. a thing that I think I think with stand up and stuff for me has been a thing of like when I'm put out stuff I can go back or listen to. I'm like, yeah, I was proud of that. You know, yeah. I'm still proud of it.
Right.
You know,
like my Conan set. Yeah, I still dig it. From three years ago.
Stuff that you could be like that holds up, that you still that's funny. That I was like at that moment, I was like, yeah. And then you could be like, yeah, maybe I could have done, but like it's like a moment. I'm proud of that. You know what I mean? And I think to me that's the best thing. But you do have to, and I think that's a good way to also know that that means that you have to be ready and work, like you said, to so when that opportunity comes, it's the best in that time. It's not some shitty thing that like, and then you're like, oh, I should have done that, and now it's out there forever. You know what I mean?
That's how I look at it, man.
Staying gig fit for the opportunity.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people cheating it nowadays because to bring it back to that social media thing, there are a lot of people, you know, not working the shit out of a set and stuff, but knowing they trim the fat in the edit.
Well, that comes back to haunt you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because you can shake and fake it all you want, you know. That old term of a fake it till you make it, but you get a video that goes viral and then you start filling up rooms for the next 4 months and you're just trash.
You don't have it. You're just trash.
You're not coming back, you know, to the rooms. Cause I know how fucking hard it is to go headline with some decent material and you're going like, God, I gotta fucking keep this room of ADD texters, you know, in the game, in the pocket, you know, like people, I notice also like touring with the underbags where callbacks and everything work
again.
The what?
Underbags?
Yeah, the bags where they got to put their phones in the bag.
Oh, God, I got it.
Oh, what are they called?
Yonder, that's the company.
Oh, right.
But you know,
I actually thought it was like the name of a band.
Yeah, yeah.
You were like, you know, I was touring with the Underbags.
I was opening for Yonder Bag, man. These guys are fucking crazy. But I'm saying like, you got Yonder Bags and all of a sudden callbacks are working again because people hear the whole set.
Oh, right.
There, you can do stories, you know, where
is Bill and Bill's shows all like that?
Yeah, they got the underbags, and a lot of clubs have them now too, like the Punchline and
Sack
and San Fran and Cobbs. Yeah,
oh, that's great.
So, does Bill insist on that because it's quite an extra charge?
Well, I think that a lot of people are just doing it now because it's really as much as people complain about it. What they don't realize is they're going to get a better show for their self.
For their self.
You know, like, oh, wow, that was funny as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You would have missed like three quarters of it because you're just texting.
Yeah, yeah,
90% of people who complain aren't paying attention.
Right.
You can tell during the show they're not paying attention.
And also I feel like it's like once you realize, because to me a lot of it is because you have it. It's kind of like having like if you smoke cigarettes because you have them or you have the phone. But if I... You know, if I can't use it, you just forget about it. After like 10 minutes, you're like, whatever. And you focus on the
show.
Especially,
you're like, well, I always go to the movies and I leave my phone in the car.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I try to go to the movies like on a Tuesday at noon where there's no texters in there.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I do this bit and boy, do people fucking clam up on it right now. But I always say like, you ever in a movie theater and you see a texter and you hope a shooter shows up? You know what I mean? Like down there, row 3, man, get rid of this dude. Shooters can be good, man. There's certain times.
Oh, you're saying that divides an audience.
But that works
international.
When I'm in a movie theater, man, I just love to just disappear into the movie.
You know what? The action, I mean, I don't leave mine in the car or anything, but the action of turning your phone off, it actually does feel good, which makes me realize how much I do rely on my phone.
I'm fucking addicted to it.
Well, we all
it
are
sucks.
Because that's what I'm saying. But once you take it away from you realize it's like, oh, I'm not that addicted to it. You know what I mean? Like, I can live for 2 hours and without and it's better because you just it's kind of like being in the present. It's the whole thing about being in the moment and then you were like and then like, oh fuck, I didn't check my phone, and then you check and they're like, oh, there's good news or whatever. You're like, you're not checking constantly or whatever. Try to get hopefully an email that comes and you're waiting or whatever. So but I was thinking I wanted to say something on your point there
of the phone thing, because you just reminded me my parents are going traveling across Canada this year, and they're boomers, they're not used to phones, and I actually worry about them in this era because they were doing fine in life without the phones, but now that they're traveling across Canada, they need a new iPhone because the world has evolved.
You got to pay for shit or GPS maps.
And you also have to scan those QR codes to get a menu now.
Yeah, you're fucked now.
You have to use it.
So the world has forced it on some people who were doing fine. Yeah. They're doing fine without fucking phones.
Yeah, it's full force addiction.
You got to evolve, man. But I was going to say that, so you were talking about going to the movies and stuff like that, because I wanted to ask, like, when you're on the road and stuff like that, what's a thing that you do recreationally before, like, the show? Like, are you a person that stay in the hotel and, like, I need to work on my line, you know, my set or whatever? Yeah. Or do you do, you know, there's some people that go the whole hiking,
Bill as
well. You know.
Bill's in every ballpark in America type of guy, isn't he?
He did that on a couple runs, but when I'm on the road, because I tour, I headline all over the place on my own, and that's when you're in a town for like 3 days.
Yeah, specifically like with when you're by yourself, because when you're with somebody, it's like you kind of like, you got to go with it, their schedule.
Always go to the movies. I try to catch up on movies.
Okay.
I always go to the gym every day at the hotel. And then,
even if the gym is, you know, like the shitty,
I just go.
Sometimes just a ball and that's it.
Yeah, I just go in there for an hour, And then I'll find out, like, I'm really into architecture.
Okay.
So I'll Google, like, Frank Lloyd Wright or Neutra or any of the great famous architects, and I find out if there's any buildings or homes there, and then I go look at those.
Oh, okay.
I really love doing that.
That's cool.
Shit. Yeah.
That's cool.
He's our first architecture guy. Oh, you're the first one, man.
I fucking love that shit.
Right. So why is that thing? Is that, like, a thing that you ever, since you were little, you liked it, or how did you get into architecture?
I found out how I fell in love with it about a year ago. It was the first time that it really hit me. During COVID, I went back to Yosemite, where I was born and raised, in the park.
I was born
in Yosemite.
Wait, are you a, like, Jungle Book?
Yeah. It's so funny. Like,
are you Mowgli?
Whenever I tell people that, like, dummies would be like, oh, so did you guys, like, grow up in a cave? I go, dude, it was 1966. It wasn't the 30s.
Yeah.
Ansel Adams, was he like taking pictures of your family, you know? But going back there during the pandemic, me and a buddy went to hike Half Dome. Okay. And then I realized where it really came from after all these years. I'm obsessed with design, like cars, anything.
Yeah.
Phones, electronics,
you mean
buildings,
like the actual, like,
just designs
of
stuff.
The aesthetics
of them. Yeah, aesthetics.
Stuff?
And then I realized when I was there, everything there is mid-century.
Mm.
So, you know, you have the Ahwahnee Lodge, which is basically kind of like where some of The Shining was taking place.
Yeah.
But that's like a, you know, mid-century. And then you got a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright type of flat roof buildings with lots of glass and just beautiful mid-century stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I realized, oh, this is why I love this stuff. Because
you grew up in
that. I grew up around
it. Yeah, yeah.
And then growing up in the Bay Area, a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright, a lot of Joseph Eichler homes where they're all glass. These homes that are just unbelievable, you know. These architects are, to me, they're the gods.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I play the lottery every week. I've turned into my mom. When I win the lottery.
That's my mom. She's always telling me, like, Francisco, the only thing I can always count is, like, buy me the lotto, buy me the Powerball.
Yeah.
So then you can build your production company. I was like, all right, mom,
thank you. Never know,
man. Yeah, never know. Fuck it. You know what I mean?
Somebody said if you won that, like, recently, it was at $500 million. They go, would you still do comedy? I go, no. I'm not taking spots from some starving people. That's just rude. Like, get out of here, dude. You got five.
Are you sure? Now, I fucking would. I'd still do it. I wouldn't try to take spots from people.
You're taking someone's spot if you're just doing spots. And then you fucking, everybody's back there like, this fucking guy. Yeah. I mean, maybe I open my own comedy club, Raging Bull. Each night. I'm on every night. I don't have to put any avails. I'm fucking available. It's me.
That's the way forward.
I mean, I'd probably still do comedy. Yeah. I just don't know how you would do it. You know what I mean?
Well, I think to me it would be not. It's not about like doing it for me. It would be more about like the drive of doing it.
Right.
Because once you,
right.
Because that's the thing. I mean, like, it's like the drive of everything is like, yeah, you love it, but also it's like, oh, man, I want to, you know, make money so I can be comfortable, you know, and buy the stuff that I want to buy and travel. I don't have to worry about, you know, everything. So it's like, do you have that drive anymore? Like, am I going to, are you going to, like, what we're talking about? Are you going to work as much as you need to in your stand-up and your whatever? If you're like, eh, but I got, like, $50 million. I mean, whatever.
Well, my drive was never the money. I think it would just buy you the ability to say no, wouldn't it?
My drive wasn't the money. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if my drive
well,
was
course,
my
I mean,
drive was the money, I fucking stand got up, out of stand-up a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
My drive really comes from every day trying to find a new bit. To me, it's like those fuckers mining for gold, panning for gold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, they go, oh, shit, yeah. You're in a coffee shop. You're like, I got a shiny part here. You know,
so you're trying to write a new bit every day?
No, but okay. That's what I'm always
got
constantly
it,
trying
yes.
to get the great, great
yeah,
bit
yeah,
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
It might not be better than the Kings.
Of course.
But to me, I'm like, wow. It's like back when I wrote songs, you know, you're always trying to get these great
this,
lyrics.
The hits. Yeah,
the lyrics,
yeah, yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like so fucking hard.
Yeah.
You know? So that's my drive every all the time.
So yeah, and then just quickly about the music, and because you wrote music and now you write stand up, like, is what are the similarities and differences between? Because you know, like, I mean, I like for me, somebody told me, like, I don't know if it's right, like when you write music, you first start with the melody or the music,
do
and
you,
then you add
the rhythm comes
and
first.
They kind of come together, you
or
know.
Do you have the lyrics first, and then I want to add some music
so
to
everybody's
it?
Different with me. I have to hear the song, so I'm like strumming something, and then a melody comes. To me, the lyrics right. are the third. So you're strumming something. It's like ring, 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 and then you're like, oh yeah, I know, yeah. You know, something comes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're fucked. You're like, I got the melody. Now I got to fit some words into the melody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where it's weird. You're fitting words into melody.
Got it.
But I think songwriting for me was way easier because you're only writing like maybe three verses and a chorus. You
and you
know?
Can repeat stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But with jokes, in an hour,
yeah.
there's so much writing
yeah.
as far as words.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where
yes.
songwriting, the song's like 3 minutes. You know, it's got about, you know, maybe about, you know, 90 seconds of words in it.
Mm.
So that's way different.
That's true.
That's way
true.
Different. But it's all words.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, stuff that will grab people.
But do you also do find that you have, there is, I feel like there is some kind of like, I mean, melody when it comes to stand up.
Oh,
I feel like,
yeah.
right? Like
there's a rhythm.
A rhythm that,
yeah.
that once people connect with your rhythm, then it's kind of like, oh, you got him.
Yeah.
But then they even,
right.
they're gonna
you
go,
start
with,
going and
then they
surf.
Know when to laugh just because yeah. they hear the I gotta laugh
you're
out here.
You're playing them like an instrument.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, the audience is always my drummer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay,
they
that's
are
a good way
the drummer.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
are the
yeah.
beat. Yeah. So you're just fucking singing in between those laughs, you know? So, yeah, you know, it's all, I think the only same thing between the two art forms is being on stage.
Yeah, right.
A microphone
right.
and the lights.
And that's it. Yeah,
and
you don't
no,
have nobody
no sound
else.
Check.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. You go in and
no band members. Man,
nobody.
I'm only playing my jokes tonight. You know?
Which is like, yeah, what, like, what, you know, no, you know, that you came from that world and now, what do you, because that's one of the things when I moved here to do improv first.
Right.
I didn't want to do stand up. I started doing improv and I didn't find that group. You know what I mean? Like, I think
right.
with improv, if I would have found two other people that were on the same, you know, page as I was, then maybe I would have done stand up or like, and I like doing stand up because, well, I don't have to depend on anybody.
Right.
You know, I can just put
yeah.
as much effort. So, like, for you, like, how did that, you know, because you always were in bands or you had, or, you know, like, how did that, did you like, what do you like better? You know, like, is that...
I like comedy better than anything I've ever done in my life.
Okay.
Over anything.
All right.
You know, I'm an only child.
Mm. So it is the independence then. Of...
Well, also the work ethic and drive I have.
Yeah.
A lot of times I was carrying two or three deadbeats on you just because they're
exactly.
your band. You know, this guy's like, dude, I got way too high last
yeah,
night,
and
man.
You're like,
I can't make it to rehearsal. And the other guy's like, well, me and my old lady, we like to watch CSI Miami on Thursdays. Can we rehearse on Tuesday? And then the other guy's yeah. like, why are we rehearsing? We know the songs. all of that stuff. You're carrying that shit.
Yeah.
If I had four of me in the band,
fuck,
I'd be you too, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. And that's what I was gonna ask, because you tour, you just recently opened for Metallica, which is amazing. Like, I remember that was like one of the first musics I heard when I was growing up. But like, so for that band, for example, like, are that band like four of you? Whenever you see really successful bands,
it's always dudes that all had the same drive.
Got it.
And if one dude was a lagger, they get canned once they start getting famous. They're like, cut this dude loose.
That's the thing about that Beatles documentary. Yeah. Recently, I was like, if Paul McCartney wasn't in the Beatles, they wouldn't have got shit done.
On that, though, I truly believe we were seeing the end of the Beatles.
Right, so, they're all tired of each other.
Yeah, so there was a burnout going, and he had the last drive to keep them going, like, come on, guys, let's do this last thing.
Yeah.
So he was really putting the pedal to the metal.
So you feel if we'd have seen them 10 years earlier, all four of them?
3 years earlier. I mean, they were like such a short, quick jam. But 3 years earlier, you don't get that big without each guy coming to play. I mean, like Sgt. Pepper's, man. Dudes are just coming in like, here's what I got. And the guy's like, I got this too. And then the chemistry and the lightning in the bottle was just burning. So I truly believe that's what we were seeing.
Okay.
Right.
We were seeing,
still going. But
yeah, we had John.
I got that feeling too, that they were all going in different directions. Yeah. And it wasn't about the drive. Obviously, they were successful. It's just that they were like, look, they had different things in their lives that they wanted to focus on.
And
it was kind of like, well,
absolutely.
You know what? It's over.
So, and he, thank God he was there too. You need one guy that'll just, towards the end of any band I've ever been in, there's always one guy, which is usually me, like just keeps booking gigs and recording time and songs. And the other guys are just, you feel the wheels are falling off, but you're like, dude, man, you know, it's like, it's really wild.
And then just another parallel of like bands and stand up. Like, do you think, because with bands, all of them have to have a drive, but they all have their different like positions.
Yeah.
With stand up, you know, you're usually the lead singer all the time. So it's like, how do you think about working? Like, how do you do that? Like working with different, like if comics have to work together, how would you manage that? Or how would you like work differently? Like with musicians, because they all want to be like in the spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The way I look at it is, I always said this, like, you know, when it comes to like comedy and you're on the patio and there's a bunch of dudes there, you know, I always look at it as like, there's a friendly competition, which is cool, you know, like that's a good thing to have some things to look at to try to go for.
Yeah.
You know, like when I first came here, they're like, this old fucking guy. Yeah, they're shitting on me on stage and stuff. And what they didn't understand was that was just putting fuel in my tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If everything was cool and easy, I would have probably got bored and been gone after about a month.
So that gave you that drive?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of stuff of like, oh man, you know.
And also, just from coming from the music world and being in bands, I think also didn't help you to that you already knew how to manage egos and how to deal. You know, so when you come to this world, you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen this before.
I just laughed how people would just shit on people and they didn't even know who anybody was.
You're right.
You could have been like some movie producer or you could have been like an agent or anything, and people are just fucking shooting harpoons at strangers, you know? I was just more. They could have said anything and I would never leave because I was so in love with doing comedy and I was at the Comedy Store. I was like, I don't care what you guys say. I don't see you about 90% of my day.
Yeah.
And then I realized later on, it was just a hazing.
Of course.
And they all went through it.
Yeah.
And you learn real quick who the real deal people are that are staying in the game. And once you see somebody like myself who's there 7 nights a week and doing thousands of spots, they're like, this guy, he's not going away.
Let's just hang, you know? Exactly.
So you just learn how to do that without having a jealousy or a temper. My only enemies at this age are like cancer and heart attacks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't care if somebody's doing good, I'll retweet it. I'll fucking shout them out. There's no, it's not taking anything from me.
Yeah.
And it's just helping the
business.
Well,
that you came in with all that life experience that coming out of music.
Absolutely.
Because I think back on some of my younger days in stand-up, and like we're talking about these people who, we tell ourselves they're giving us tough skin, you know, when they're doing, but there are some assholes in the mix who I didn't realize. And when I was in my early 20s, I thought, oh, they're just giving me tough skin for stand-up. And then I started to reflect a couple years ago, and also the way they've evolved over the last two decades. And I've gone, oh, no, they were... Yeah. They were assholes.
Yeah. I mean, people are toxic, man.
Yeah.
You know, they get fucking, they get desperate and they get really jealous, which is weird. And I always found that most of the time what I was doing was just shining a mirror on what they wanted to do, but were just too lazy to do. So they were angry. Instead of being angry at themselves, they were
They're projecting.
Right.
Yeah, they're
like,
projecting.
Hey, dude, you're just... Because,
for example, for you, like one of the things that I've known since I met you is like you're like, again, such a hard worker. I mean, you're doing so many spots and like, you know, like you do like 200, 250 spots a year. And then people are going to shit on that. Because you're not doing it.
Right.
It's like how, like you're going, like you're getting mad about how this guy's doing it and I only did 50 spots.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's you and you, bro. Like,
that's all it is. Shining a light on their, their laziness. And then, of course, but those people, they, over the years, they just, cast out.
Yeah.
They're just gone. There's no room for that anymore in here.
To me, it's a marathon, man. Yeah. It's like your marathon and you're like, and they're looking at you and you're like in mile 15, you know, and like still getting, and they're like, and then you're like, the person that was shitting on you is already fucking tired. Like, they're like, what happened to that part? You know?
They're like working at the Arc Light. You walk in and they're like, two tickets. They're like,
taking your movie ticket.
Oh, fuck yeah, man. I've seen the people I started with, a lot of them. They're just, you know, spinning around town still.
Well, for me, when I started doing, you know, open mics here also at the store, too, it's like it was like a class, and you could divide the people who are like, okay, these are the people that are like, are taking it for real.
Yeah.
You know, and there you could see some talent on it.
Of course.
And then the other half were like, oh, these are lunatics. These are like, they're living in a fantasy land.
Yeah.
Some are obviously literally homeless.
Yeah.
Other ones are just want to talk, you know, like, so other ones you could tell they just want to be famous, like in a week.
Totally.
You know, could see, and then obviously those are the people that kind of like, you know, because it's such a hard thing to do. And like you said, you're not making any money. You're driving fucking Vegas in the middle of the sand, you know, all this stuff.
That's like moving to LA as well.
Exactly.
It's a microcosm of that because you feel that when I've been here for 6 years now, but I noticed for the first couple of years, nobody really wants to know you because they think you're ready to leave. Always.
Well, there's time bandits, you know? People come up to me for years and they'd say, how'd you get somewhere so quick, you know, and I would stop and give them like full on, like, okay, well, I do open mics every day. And then when I'm done, I podcast and then I audition and then I go to the store and I watch the guys till like 2 a.m. just to see all the different spots. And then I hit all the other clubs. And while I'm telling them, I can see them just completely tuning out. They're like, nah. They're thinking I'm going to give them some magic fucking.
Like, you're just going to download this app.
Yeah,
and you download
you
this app
this
and
dick, and they open this door and it's just castles of stage time.
Well, yeah, you could suck dick, but like, but that's not gonna last either.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, I think that's the thing.
Yeah, you know, it's just crazy
because you come.
It's just you know. So now I don't really give anybody any kind of advice unless I see they're seriously. In the game,
exactly.
And I'll be like, hey, man, I'm having a little problems over here. And I'll go, I'll call over there and see what's going on, see if I can get you in or get you a spot. Here's the booker, whatever.
For me, it has also been a thing because, when I've done, like, even colleges, when people come up, you know, students come up, like, hey, I want to do this and stuff like that. You know, same thing. I've done my, given my, you know, what I did, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, most there's only one guy that's actually did move to L.A. and now is doing, you know, stand-up, but also lived in an influencer house. But he's like, look, I still want to do stand-up. I know I got to get better. So but he's like, look, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have done it. But, like, he's like, literally like one person that I out of a thousand.
Right. Yeah.
And that's
and it's fucking hard as hell.
Of course.
I mean, man, it is hard as hell. I mean, the only regret I had is I didn't start maybe about 5 years just sooner. Right. But I didn't even know how to do
it. But I think that's a regret that, like, that
it's not a real regret.
It's not a real regret.
I thought you were saying it's exponential as
well. Yeah, it's not a real regret at all.
And maybe you weren't, maybe at that five years, maybe you would have, you were in a time place that you could have maybe quit, you know, that you were like, you know, I get bored about it or whatever, you know. Because for me, I'm the same way. I'm like, man, I wish I would have started when I was, like, even in college, you know. Yeah. But, like, but then I was like, I wouldn't even know. Like, to me, it was like, regret would be if, like, if you had that. I should have, like, I'm going to do, and you never did it because you were scared.
Oh,
but
that's
I never thought that until I thought about it that I could do it, then that's when I started doing it.
Yeah, right,
you know, so
right.
I feel like, to me, I'm peaceful at that because it wasn't something I was like, at 15, I'm going to do. I never knew I was going to do nothing when I was like,
kid. Man. You know, when I was sliding down the highway waiting for that lady to run me over, I remember specifically, and this came to me, I was like, God, did you see your life flash before your eyes? And I was like, no, I was just sliding down the highway. I remember I could hear everything just...
Yeah, because it hit you and you're like sliding.
Yeah, I'm sliding and she crashed into the side of the guardrail and slid back out.
Oh, she crashed.
Yeah, she crashed. She hit me and then crashed and then spun around. And all I remember, and I've told this before, sliding down the highway was no regrets. So if I die right now, I got no regrets.
You were thinking
actually felt that way.
Actually, that came to
you
me.
You came that as you were sliding?
Sliding. I was like, no regrets.
That's pretty cool.
All I kept thinking was, I'm glad I did comedy.
Dude, that's self-actualization. That's like the height of Maslow's hierarchy and needs.
It really happened.
That's amazing to like,
congratulations.
You could have, because.
And it was all because of comedy.
Really?
It wasn't, looking back, it was just because, oh man, I'm glad the last fucking 7-8 years I was just doing comedy.
I did what I wanted to
just
do.
Just fucking doing it, man.
Really, self-actualization is a thing that's only supposed to happen when you're on your deathbed.
Right, and I was on my deathbed.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was really happening. I was like, I'm seconds away from her killing me.
Wow.
But her tire fell off, and that's why she didn't run me over. Because she hit me, and she would have just mowed me over. It was an Escalade.
Wow.
But the tire fell off. It dropped to the ground and made the vehicle go the other way.
Wow.
And then I was just laying there like, oh, wow, man.
Wow. So speaking of that, like, because are you, like, I mean, are you, like...
That's a good segue. Are you about to ask?
Yeah, because, I mean, like, are you, like, superstitious or, like, are you, like, you know, believe in something? Or, like, when you go... Because we ask the questions, like, when you go on the road, like, do you bring something, you know, with you in case something happens? Or are you superstitious, you know, like, when you're about to fly or you're about to do a show? Or, like, in that moment, like, I mean, like, is that a... do you believe... Do you go, like, man, like... Because, obviously, that was... You were meant to be here. Because some people, you know, another time, you know, would have like.
Of course. Just
so it's like,
over.
Do you like have any of that like in your life in terms of being superstitious or being like, or being emotional when you travel, especially, you know, to bring something with you that you want to have in case something like that happens?
Fans are superstitious generally, aren't they? Don't you always have to do like a pre-show kind of ritual?
I don't
sometimes?
Really have any of that, you know.
Right,
to me, I just fucking wake up each day and just. You know, do it. And then if I wake up the next day there, you know what I mean? I just keep going and I don't think about anything. Weird shit has happened to me my whole life. And I just look at it as I don't question it. I go like, wow, that's fucking weird.
The timing of stuff. Because then you think like, I there's stuff that you're like, if this doesn't happen, this doesn't happen.
Right.
Kind of
oh, well,
so
that's
like,
if I didn't work at Harley,
right?
I wouldn't be in comedy.
Right.
And I look at all of those across my whole entire life and I'm like, wow, this needed to happen for that to happen.
Exactly.
And the main thing with comedy was, you know, here I am. I played music 25 years and I came down to the end of it and I go, all right, I'm good. I did art for 25 years. Fucking great.
Yeah. And
now, what do I love? I love motorcycles. What if I just sell motorcycles? My buddy was like, come sell them. I'll get you health care. At the time, I was like, I need health care.
Yeah,
I'm
fucking
40. I got no health care.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there I am selling motorcycles. And then here comes the Tarantino team coming in, and it's just like that scene from Godfather. I'm out, and they pull me back in.
Oh,
somehow, I'm back, meant to be an artist. Yeah. And I was like, get the fuck out of
that
this.
That is amazing, too, because it's kind of like you,
it's coming. It comes to you.
That's what happened, though, man. Awesome. And next
and that's
thing
life
you know,
telling you, like, hey.
Yeah, what are you doing?
You don't belong here.
Yeah.
You belong in this
world. You're on this path, and you're not a quitter.
Yeah.
And I didn't just quit music. People are like, how'd you quit after 25 years? It's like, the illegal downloading knocked me out of the game.
Oh, really? How?
Yeah, well, because I used to sell CDs on the road.
Oh,
make money from the CDs.
Mm.
You know, like you could do a $1,000 gig and make like 800 in CDs.
Yeah.
And now you're at a $2,000 gig night or whatever, and you're doing that all the time, and you can be a mid-level blue-collar musician for years.
Got it.
Be out fucking playing gigs and doing art.
Yeah.
But I think about that the most in my entire life, of those guys walking onto that fucking Van Nuys Harley Davidson dealership.
Yeah, because they could have gone to another one.
Anyone.
You probably weren't work. You probably break.
Anyone.
You're in lunch, whatever.
I might not work that day.
Bad
anything.
Mood.
Anything. Yeah. Anything like, fuck these guys. You know what I mean? But they come on. I'm out in the parking lot because I was the hustler like I am with comedy.
Yeah.
I was out there like, here come some customers. Hey, man, you guys want a street glide?
Yeah, and they're like,
oh, no, we're actually here for this. And the other guys are in just like some of the people on the patio when
smoking,
I started comedy.
Smoking, doing, talking, whatever.
Weed,
yeah, yeah.
Surfing the net. And I was out there and the guys were like, well, we were actually with the Tarantino, you know, he's doing a Tarantino Presents movie. And they're going to do this biker film. We're looking for somebody to kind of advise on that. What kind of motorcycles should we get? And, you know, I started working with him as Larry Bishop and Dennis fucking Hopper.
Wow.
Who is a goddamn god
genius
to me.
Yeah.
No one's better to me than Dennis Hopper. No one.
Oh, really?
Right.
He worked with Brando.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with James Dean. And he worked with Coppola.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
He
worked with fucking...
Fonda.
You know, rock, yeah, Fonda, yeah. But rock.
And most importantly, he worked with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah,
so
that's the most important. But also, he directed the most iconic gang film ever, Colors.
Oh,
he directed the greatest biker film ever, Easy Rider.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's fucking, you know, Blue Velvet. And this guy's a king.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talked to them, and next thing you know, two movies later, I'm doing comedy.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I think about the friends mostly. The friends I've gotten from comedy more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was 44. My friends are long gone with kids, soccer practice, divorces, moved to fucking other cities, you know. And
texting in the
Facebook people
in the movies.
Yeah.
if they're sliding on the highway after getting hit, there's no satisfaction going
through
their
mind. But
I think
about all my new friends now over the last 12 years of these dudes. These are some of the best friends I've had in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's fucking wild.
Yeah.
And this club, the Comedy Store, means if this club wasn't here, I wouldn't even live in LA at all. I wouldn't live here at all. I'd be back in New York. You know?
Yeah.
There's just no way. This club is why I'm in this city.
I fucking
I love California.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
But I love comedy more than anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And obviously New York would have been better if this wasn't here. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was awesome, man. I think we could talk to you more an hour, but we gotta go.
That flew, man.
That slid. Like you're like,
we just slid on by.
Slid on by. Wow. But before we get out of here, if you can please let the viewers know where they can find you, where they can reach you, and also you know you have some shows coming up.
Yeah.
So if you want
to
let them up,
check out his podcast, Let There Be Talk.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So if you want to take the camera.
Let There Be Talk. First podcast ever to have AC/DC.
Oh, wow. Yes, I remember that.
First podcast they ever did, AC/DC.
Oh, that's awesome.
650 episodes, 11 years. I got July 9th. I will be at the Vulcan Gas Company. Two shows, one night.
In Austin?
Yep, Austin. And then July 15 and 16, I'm in Fort Collins, Colorado, at the Comedy Fort, which is a great new club.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really kick ass. And then starting September 9th through October 28th, I'm doing a 30-something date tour with Marcus King, music and comedy.
Yeah,
and Neil Francis. And we're doing like two nights at the Beacon, two nights at the Tabernacle, two at the Wiltern.
Amazing, man.
Yeah, so a huge... We've had this dream, Marcus and I, to do an actual rock and comedy tour. And I don't know how it's going to go. It's always tough.
Yeah.
You know.
To combine those.
Yeah.
Because it's different moods, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's worth a shot to do.
Yeah. Why not?
And Marcus King and Neil Francis are two guys that I featured on the podcast early on.
Very doable. I think. Oh, yeah. And too, now that you mention them, like their music, I think, goes great with that comedy atmosphere, like not the speakeasy atmosphere, but you know, like just the relaxed, like what you need for stand up is that kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be great, man.
You know, we're going to be on a tour bus, which is great. So I don't have to be at an airport every day. And it'll be really interesting. And it's a learning curve to figure it out. You get on the road and you go, I got to figure out how to do this. I don't know how to do it.
I was just in the Dominican Republic. I had to do it in Spanglish my first time doing it. I had to figure it out.
Just figure it out, man.
You know, but you need to put yourself in those positions just like you were in the Harley Davidson store. Like if you're in, the, you know, you got to put yourself,
because
that's the only way for you to, I think that's where, you know, obviously what luck is.
It's the only way you can learn it.
Yeah, yeah. And because you learn, you know, something didn't work from them, but you learn.
Next night you go, all right, well, I don't think it's going to be quicker jokes, or maybe they're into stories, you got people going and getting beers or pissing or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a different, you know, atmosphere than a comedy club, but I can't wait to do it.
That's awesome, man.
Sounds really exciting, man. Yeah. Buddy, we have one final question we always ask of our guests on the way out the door, which is, do you have a favorite piece of travel advice you like to pass on to people? This could be something that you were given yourself or something that you've just discovered over time.
Oh, my favorite travel, and people always say this to me. They go, man, you fucking, you're so lucky you've been to Europe. Oh, you've been to fucking, you know, you've been to Spain or where, I've been everywhere. My piece of advice is go check out America. Like, people are so worried about traveling outside of the country. They've never been to, like, you know, Yosemite. They've never been to Yellowstone. They've never been to fucking Mount Rushmore or anything. Mm-hmm. America's got crazy rad shit.
Yeah.
And I think that it's super underrated, and especially in this crazy, inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua Tree. Just go there.
I know. Yeah.
Go check shit out, man.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid, and you guys. Your parents threw you in a ride and you just drove somewhere and you never forgot it.
That's true.
Yeah. It's
and you were like in the back seat.
Just looking at shit.
You know, but you're like, you remember those. Oh, those are great memories.
That's the greatest.
I went across Canada a few times with my father was military, and I'm like, getting to see my own country was a very valuable thing for then going on to the rest of the world.
So much cool shit out there.
My dad would take me when we were little. He was very into, like, we got to go and show Venezuela, because he wanted us to and I remember those things, and it was cool because like you said, it's kind of like you need to appreciate it. Yeah, especially in the U.S., it's like so much stuff to do that so many people like don't realize that you could do it. And yeah, you don't need sometimes to spend that much, you know.
No.
You can just get in a car and go
a road trip out to fucking, you know, wherever you're at, find the national park or whatever, do some glamping.
Glamping. That's my type.
That's me too.
I don't like that. Into the whole
City mouse.
I'll be outside and then you're like, all right, time to go to sleep. Let me go get some AC.
Get these bugs out of here.
I'm like,
so fancy.
That's my travel tip. America.
That's
an awesome travel.
It's fucking rad.
Nice.
Dean Del Rey.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much for hanging out with us, man.
Yeah, that was awesome, man. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And remember to keep subscribing to the podcast, rate it in iTunes, listen up, you know, promote it. If you have any questions, please send in DM. Also follow us on, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, everywhere. And
the stuff. All the stuff.
And we'll see you next time. Bye, hello.